Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. So today is our last full day as on the retreat. I wanted to give a reflection that maybe is a kind of summary or a perhaps a distillation of the things that we need to apply in our practice, whether we're on retreat or after the retreat when we're engaged in activity. And you know, the application of right view, the application of discernment, I think, is an important piece in our continuity of practice. Traditionally the basis of insight, liberating insight, is through seeing the characteristics, universal characteristics of anicca, dukkha, anatta, impermanence, suffering, not self, and of course all the permutations of translation. Although I think not self's the only one who doesn't have a lengthy kind of alternative translations. And that's where it's helpful, actually, I think, to be becoming familiarized with some of the basic Pali concepts, or the concepts that arise through the Pali, like we do in our, just like, well, that's one of the things that I think the chanting is helpful for, when we do morning and evening chanting, and we do it in Pali, do it in English, and we start to get a feel for some of the words, some of the concepts. So I say, like the morning chanting that we do has the kind of a, after going through the recollection of the five khandhas, rupang anicchan vedan anicchan, then sambe sankhara anicca sambe dhamma anatta, and that's a shorthand for what forms or can form a basis of insight. There's in the Dhammapada, there are three verses that are begin, so sabbe sankhara anicca, so all conditioned things are impermanent. When one sees this with wisdom and grows disenchanted with dukkha, with suffering, with stress, this is the path of purity. And in the same, sambe sankhara dukkha, all conditioned phenomena are stressful, are suffering, are unsatisfactory, when one sees this with discernment and grows disenchanted with suffering or stress, with dukkha, this is the path, this is the path of purity. And the same with the sabbe dhamma anatta, all dhammas are not self. And similarly, when one sees this with wisdom and grows disenchanted with suffering, this is the path of purity. So that applying this insight or perspective or view to our experience, and this is something both to be working with in the meditation as we develop the factors of calm and insight, but they're supported by this recollection of, and how the Buddha phrases it, these are universal characteristics. This is the a universal nature. All compounded things have the nature to be impermanent, changing, inconstant. All compounded things have the nature to be stressful, suffering in some way, unsatisfying, and all things, all, say, dhammas, there's a bit of a difference. Sabbe sankhara anicca, sabbe sankhara dukkha, sabbe dhamma anatta, so that all things are not self. So that when speaking of the things which are that which is compounded, then that includes everything that is of the body and mind, of phenomena, mental phenomena, physical phenomena, internal, external. But sabbe dhamma is a broader term in that it includes also the uncompounded, and which is nibbana. So that sabbe dhamma anatta is not self. So that all, not only are all compounded things not self, the very nature of nibbana is, of course, that one can't lay claim over it to as being one's own or belonging to oneself. It is not self. So that even that is of a non-self nature. And being able to reflect and investigate using this framework. And it supports the disenchantment, and that's a central piece to the ability of the mind and the heart to let go, to relinquish, to or to not pick up things. And so as soon as we pick something up, then it's heavy. It just is a natural result. There, and if I pick up this glass of water, and I can make use of it, maybe drink a bit of water, but if I'm not willing to put it down, then actually I don't really want to sit here and give up the whole talk holding this glass of water. It's heavy, it's uncomfortable, it's a burden. And that is exactly what to be able to see the discomfort and dis-ease that we create in picking up things. Of course, it's easy to see when you've got something physical and holding, but the way that we pick up feelings and perceptions and memories and ideas and views and opinions and preferences and proliferations and we pick them all up and we carry them. And if they were actually physical things, you know, we'd look like some rickshaw driver from Calcutta. I mean, it's just covered in stuff, and then wonder why we're miserable. To be able to use these tools in their correct manner, in the sense that one's using it, this tool of directing attention to these characteristics of impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, not self, in order to facilitate the mind's disenchantment and willingness to relinquish, to unburden the heart, to free the heart, so that if we pick something up, even the contemplations of anicca, dukkha, anatta, and we carry them as a burden, they're not reaching their potential. They're not being used as a in accordance with the goal that the Buddha is setting out for us. We can pick up aspects of the Dhamma and complicate it, get neurotic and fearful around it. We can do all sorts of things. But that isn't really the goal that the Buddha has for us. The Buddha's goal is to give us the tools which will allow us to experience clarity and freedom, a relinquishing of burdens. So that these reflections around anicca, dukkha, anatta are very, very important, but we have to learn how to use them skillfully. We have to learn how to apply them. It isn't just a matter of things come up in the mind and you just sort of hit them with the phrase anicca, dukkha, anatta, and it's going to all disappear. You have to really apply the essence. What is it pointing to? What is the nature of that? And this is where Ajahn Chah said that this is how we sustain our practice. He compares it to giving somebody a glass of water, a bottle of water, and so you give them a glass of water, a bottle of water, and they'll drink that, and they'll come back, and they'll need some more. And he said, but if one takes them and shows them a spring, then they can fill their own bottle. They can drink from that spring for as long as they want. So in the same way, in practice, those contemplations of anicca, dukkha, anatta are like the spring, where there's this the potential of a constant welling up of a freshness in in our practice, and a true insight into the nature of our experience. So to be able to return to that spring of the nature of truth. In contemplating these characteristics, the texts point to things that are kind of inherently cloud or cover over the experience of the truth of anicca is obscured by what in the Pali is called santati, which is continuity. We don't recognize how impermanent, changing, inconstant, unsure our experience, the experience of things, is because there is a continuity of arising and passing away, so that, and it's happening, usually happening very quickly, so that everything seems to flow. It's sort of like we look at our physical body, and for however long we've had a body, it has been constantly changing, but there's that feeling of continuity, and so that we don't recognize it when we conceive of ourselves. For myself as an example, we conceive of ourselves. I don't conceive of myself as a 63-year-old man. I'm somewhat younger than that. But the reality is that it's been changing. One needs to bring it to mind as to remind ourselves to be willing to look at that, because it is being hidden by that continuity. Similarly with the mind, and even to a greater degree, the mind is constantly changing, but we're always holding on to whatever the last they're only bits or fragments of experience that we hold on to, and say this is what reality is constructed of, this is what the experience was, and we fail to notice the span of experience, that continuity covers over the experience of change and impermanence. So to bringing that to mind and recognizing that there is this natural tendency for truth to be hidden, and hidden in plain sight, but hidden. The experience of dukkha, the texts say is being hidden. What they use is the word iriyapada, which is the postures, and There's a literal way that is in the sense that iryapada, the postures of sitting, walking, standing, lying down, so that we... And because what happens is that we experience something that is dukkha, that is uncomfortable, that is unsatisfying, that is stressful. And the habit is to change, to get out of that somehow. Get me out of this. And so that we change postures, we move. If we experience some kind of discomfort when we're sitting down, and we get up and move around, or even if you lie down, thinking, "Well, I just want to annihilate myself in sleep," that inevitably becomes uncomfortable, and then you're forced to get up again and do something else. So it's this constant moving to get away from that experience, so that it's both the physical posture, but then it's also that moving away from the experience. And this is where the Buddha points out in one of his discourses that for the ordinary unenlightened being, the only way of relief of dukkha vedana, of unpleasant sensation, is to try to gain pleasant sensation, to try to find something pleasant, to get out of the unpleasant. And that is that, just that movement away, and it's natural, it's ingrained, but it's also what keeps us, what keeps the truth of dukkha hidden, so that it keeps it obscured, so that we're not struck by it, we're not motivated so strongly by it. And so this is where the Buddha puts his emphasis on, say, come, Four Noble Truths, and bring it back. The first noble truth of suffering is to be understood, it's to be known. So there's a very overt encouragement to be able to understand, to see clearly, to bring it to mind, so that we're able to see with discernment, see with wisdom, so that we can respond with disenchantment, and that is the catalyst that allows us to start to experience purity and freedom. The truth of anatta is the Pali word that's used is kana. And what that means, usually it's translated as compactness, which doesn't actually mean very much, I don't think. But that it's sort of all of a piece. It's all, it's sort of the, because we don't see things, the experience of self, the experience of I, me, and mine, the experience of it's all together, so that we don't see all the causal conditions that connect in order to make that feeling of I and me and mine something solid, something concrete. We don't see it in its discrete experience. We see it in its concrete experience. So then so it needs to be contemplated and investigated. In that sense of all of a piece, the anatta, is because it's the fear. It's just like when the Buddha there's a discourse where he talks. It's quite brief. And he said to relinquish what is not yours. If you relinquish what is not yours, it will be for your long-term welfare and happiness. And what is not yours? And he goes, body is not yours, feeling is not yours, perception is not yours, mental formations are not yours, consciousness is not yours. Relinquish what is not yours. If you relinquish it, it will be for your long-term welfare and happiness. It's very, so direct and to me, so beautiful because it brings it back to this. It's not a philosophical concept. It's not a speculative theory. What is not under your control, you can't say is yours. And body, feeling, perception, mental formations, consciousness have never been under our control. We have limited success from time to time for getting it to do a little bit what we want. It's really, it keeps displaying. This is really, if this were mine, I wouldn't want it like this. So to be able to reflect in that and pulling things apart a bit, seeing their in their separate and discrete elements, that's a one of the ways that gives us that opportunity to see through or see past that compactness or that all of a piece nature that tends to hide that truth of anatta. So that these are tools to be used, and these are tools to be to be cultivated and developed, and I think that's a skilled artisan is somebody who really knows how to use the tools and use the materials that they have at hand, and that's what we have to. As practitioners, we have to cultivate that kind of a skill as an artisan, as a craftsman, almost as an artist, learning how to use the tools we have, learning to use the circumstances that we're in, the raw materials of our existence, in order to cultivate this understanding of truth. Yesterday I touched on it in the questions and answers, but I think it's worth, because we're bringing up this theme of anicca, dukkha, anatta, it's probably good apply or to emphasize it again, and that in the teachings there's also like taking those themes of anicca, dukkha, anatta in one's meditation and in one's insight They do result in a particular it manifests or displays itself in a particular way, so that using anicca, impermanence, as a theme for establishing the mind, then there's animitta samadhi or animitta vimokkha, so that both the concentration dependent on anicca as a perception, as well as the kind of a liberation of mind, a release of mind with anicca as the theme, has the manifestation of what's called the animitta, which is signless, so that one is not, the mind isn't getting hooked into, distracted by the signs, the displays, the characteristics of phenomena, whether it's physical or mental. But one is focusing on that arising and ceasing. And when there's that arising and ceasing, it's not something that's distracting. It's something that is wonderfully settling, because then it lets you to go, allows you to go through that and drop that habit of mind to get hooked by, you know, something appears solid, it appears attractive, it appears unattractive, it appears like something good, it appears like something bad, and we get hooked by the nimitta of it, the sign of it, the display of it, and of course we get dragged along by the story or the reaction that we have or the infatuation or the fear that we have, but to be able to dwell in that perception and contemplation of impermanence allows the mind to settle into the signless stability of the mind, and that's animitta samadhi, animitta vimokkha. There's a release through through signlessness. Through the holding the dukkha, stress, suffering, unsatisfactoriness as a theme, then there is the possibility of a stability of mind through desirelessness, apanahitta. Panahitta samadhi, panahitta vimokkha. It's a release through desirelessness, and it's not desireless because one is holding desire down. It's desireless because one has seen through suffering. One has seen through the stressful nature. One's seen through that the propensity for dis-ease. And there's disenchantment with that. There's a relinquishment of that. There's an ability of the mind and the heart to dwell in the mind not getting caught by that movement of desire, apannihitta. So that this contemplation of dukkha, isn't. So one doesn't contemplate dukkha to make oneself miserable. One contemplates dukkha in order to free the mind from its habit and to incline the mind to disenchantment and desirelessness, which is cooling and spacious. The contemplation of anatta is a can manifest in sunyata. So sunyata samadhi, sunyata vimokkha, so release through emptiness, stability of mind through emptiness. It's the emptiness of not self. It's the emptiness of self, rather. Emptiness of self, emptiness of possession, emptiness of claims of ownership and becoming. It's not a kind of some realm of metaphysical emptiness. It's an emptiness of the way the mind inclines to laying claim over experience, assuming identity around experience. So there's a one that when that emptiness is recognized, then there's this incredible release and stability that is possible. So this contemplation of anatta is for a purpose. Anicca, dukkha, anatta is for a purpose, and these are the tools that we have as practitioners. And learning how to use these tools Ajahn Chah gives a couple of really memorable images, one of them is the image of a spider, and he talks about it as himself. You know, if you want to, everything is teaching us if we're willing to look and investigate. And then saying, just think of a spider. You can learn from a spider, you know. and he gives the image of the spider making its web. And once it's made its web, then it goes to the middle and stays in the middle of that web. And then when a fly or a bee comes along and touches the web, and gets caught by the web, then the spider immediately runs out and wraps that bee or that fly up and then brings it back to the center, and that's its food, its sustenance, is it? And he said as practitioners, it's very similar in the sense that we need to have this web of mindfulness and clear comprehension around us that's able to experience the contact with the senses, sight, sound, smells, taste, touch, mental formations, and whenever we're experience contact, then that mindfulness and clear comprehension needs to go out, take that experience, wrap it up in anicca, dukkha, anatta, and bring it back to the center. And that's your sustenance. That's your food. That's how you live as a practitioner. Is taking experience, realizing it's impermanent, it's unsatisfactory, it's non-self nature, and that's what feeds and nurtures and sustains us as practitioners. If we're have contact with the senses and we it's just triggering off sort of likes and dislikes and speculative thought and fears and worries, then there's no end to it. But to be able to take that experience and to to wrap it up with these universal truths. One is giving oneself the opportunity to be free from suffering, and that is of course that's the goal, that's the purpose, that's what we're here for. Another image that Ajahn Chah uses is and I particularly thought it was interesting because he's from the Ubon province, northeast of Thailand, and I think he only got, because his image is one from the sea, and probably only went to the sea once or twice in his whole life, but then he's, you know, and he takes experience, and he's contemplating, and it's percolating, and saying, "This is one of distinguishing characteristics of a accomplished practitioner is that everything is being brought in and contemplated and reflected on in the light of Dhamma." So anyway, the Ajahn Chah going saying it's like the waves coming onto the shore at the sea. So the waves come in. Sometimes there's just sort of small little waves, and sometimes there's big waves. But the shore receives them all. The waves come in, and they reach the shore. They strike the shore, but the shore is there, and whether it's say at low tide or high tide, the shore is there. And he said it's like with us as practitioners, we receive and experience all these different contacts of through the senses, through our own minds, and these waves of what is perceived as good or bad, perceived as that one wants or doesn't want, that one likes or doesn't like, that one is pleasant or unpleasant, but all of those have to be received through the anicca dukkha anatta. That's the shore. That's the ground. That's the stable kind of base to receive all that these impressions in the same way that the sea comes in, and fundamentally the shore doesn't go away. It's just there receiving it. So that for us to be directing our attention in that way, that we receive our thoughts, our sense contact, but it isn't received through reactivity or trying to get rid of it or chasing after it. It's just received it with that reflection of this is impermanent, this is unsatisfactory, this is not self. And it isn't just, again, it isn't just applying the formula to it, but it's applying the theme in order to try to get a feel for what is it like to experience something that is anicca. And of course, that's where Ajahn Chah so often, when he spoke or taught about anicca as, and some obviously sometimes as impermanent, as changing, because that's its traditional definition, but he would oftentimes speak about it in terms of unsure, not certain. Because that's, say, objectively, anicca is experienced as this is changing, this is arising and ceasing. But, say, subjectively, how we feel it is, this is not certain, this is not sure. And so that to be able to tap into that feeling, because usually we try to cover that over, try to make things certain, make them sure, make them solid, make them stable. And sometimes that impulse is actually distancing us from the experience, and then we're missing the opportunity to get a bigger picture that helps us to turn to, again, to disenchantment and relinquishment. So again, these are what the tools are for, being able to give us the opportunity to relinquish, to put down, to let go. And of course, the letting go has to be done with wisdom, has to be done with discernment. There's a one of the qualities that the Buddha points to as kind of essential is the quality of appamada, which is like heedfulness or circumspection, care, and both are on a mundane level, we need to have this quality of heedfulness and circumspection. But even in the application of within our practice, how we apply the tools, how we apply the insights, how we apply the structures of the Buddhist teachings, that has to be done with this appamada. We have to be circumspect. We have to apply things in the right way. We have to be accomplishing the purpose. We have to be utilizing these tools skillfully. So this aspect of appamada is a quality that we need to remind ourselves of, and it's actually the last words that the Buddha spoke. There are two qualities that he pointed to. And it's a very short phrase. Vaya dhamma sankhara appamadena sampadeta. So that vaya dhamma sankhara. So all compounded things are dissolving. They're passing away. They're changing. It's another way of pointing to impermanence. Appamadena sampadeta. So fulfill heedfulness. Bring this quality of heedfulness and circumspection to fulfillment. So I offer that for reflection this morning.
Now let us express our approval of this Dhamma teaching.